Well, this took a while.
Yeah, a bit longer than we thought.
Sorry about that, guys. Things kind of went crazy, and then crazy, and then crazier.
And then crazy times 10, yeah. At least.
Now we could
15.5.
Yes, indeed. We could waffle on about all the crazies, but this is a fun history podcast, so I thought it would be much more suitable to come back with a little fun history gag. Why not? In front of the waffle. So I heard this one on another podcast, the Mark and Commode movie podcast.
Yay!
Such a good podcast.
We love you, Mark.
And so a Roman centurion walks into a bar, holds up two fingers and says, 5 pints, please. Love that.
And I've got one for you. Shakespeare walks into the bar and the barman said, "Oi, mate, you're barred." I do love that one. It is so bad. Yeah, I got that one from Doctor Who. Okay, shoot me.
And listen through at the end of the podcast. We've got some exciting ways to... We've expanded some of the ways that you can communicate with us, and we'd love to hear if you got any historical hysterics. jokes.
That sounds interesting.
Funny jokes about history. Yeah.
Look on your face right now.
And because it's been so long, and again, we're doing this quite late at night, funnily enough.
Yeah,
that happens.
Yeah.
So I think we should get on with our triumphant return.
We shall. Yay, we're back. Oh my God, we're back again.
Okay.
Where's mine?
Pop the theme music in first.
Okay.
What the? Hello and welcome to What the History, your bite-sized podcast of fun history facts to make you say, what the history?
Totally, what the history.
I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
Woohoo! And what wonderful piece of history do you have for us this evening?
Okay, now this is a bit of a long one, so enjoy. Okay, now over the long break we've just needed to have here at What the History headquarters, I've been able to catch up on a few things, binging on HBO shows being one, and I've come across an interesting series that I was asked to watch and one based on a true story. This, of course, piqued my interest, and everyone knows how I love to fact check and research. This series has recently been okayed for a second series, yay, and centres on the life and loves of one Miss Anne Lister. I am speaking of Gentleman Jack, a series created and written by Sally Wainwright based on the diaries of Anne. Born in Halifax, Yorkshire, England on the 3rd of April 1791, Anne was a bit different to what was the norm for women in the 1800s. She was a landowner, a businesswoman, wore black, lots of black, was educated, a politician, a traveller, wrote in her diary a lot, would take on anyone who displeased her and loved other women. And she was not afraid to admit this to herself, feeling nothing out of place with her for her attractions, and said, and I quote, I love and only love the fairer sex. Oh, bless her. I love her. The Halifax residents jeered and abused Anne in the street for her more masculine looks and swagger, giving her the nickname of Gentleman Jack. I must admit that I am intrigued by a woman who not only dressed like a man, but had could be what it was seen as being rather cavalier with her love life. I didn't say that. That was a quote. Anne herself quipped when she was at school, and I quote, "The girls liked me and had always liked me. I had never been refused by anyone." 15-year-old Anne began writing her diaries when she was at boarding school, where her despairing mother sent her tomboy daughter when she was 7. The teachers thought Anne's rebellious streak would influence the other girls, so she was confined to the attic in between attending classes. Another girl was sent to the attic, a girl named Eliza, who was the illegitimate daughter of an English surgeon. The two girls became lovers, and Anne would write in her diary in code a mixture of zodiac, ancient Greek, Latin, mathematical symbols and punctuation to record their relationship, along with notes on her studies and happenings of the day. Anne wanted to be rich, and Eliza was set to inherit a large sum. Money would set Anne up, and she would never have to marry a man to get it. However, Anne wanted other women. She rejected Eliza, breaking her heart, and in turn Eliza's ongoing depression sent her to an insane asylum. Anne began travelling and privately studied anatomy in Paris to try and work out where her feelings came from, which she couldn't find the answer to, and came to the conclusion they were natural and her God-given right. She also explored her attractions with several women on her travels. Anne moved on to the daughter of another doctor, Mariana, and fell in love. Mariana would hold thrall with Anne for 20 years, even when Mariana married in 1815, an act which Anne felt disgusted by, watching distraught from a church pew. The relationship was over when Mariana told Anne she could not be seen with such a masculine woman. Ooh, that's a burn. Anne moved into her family ancestral home, Shibden Hall, Halifax, also in 1815, taking over management of Shibden in 1826 when her uncle James passed away. The income from Shibden helped to fund her travelling, which she carried on with up until her death. Anne began travelling in 1819 and went to many countries and tried her hand at mountaineering, when in 1830 she successfully climbed Mount Perdu, the third highest mountain in the Pyrenees, being the first woman to ascend the mountain. In 1838 she climbed Vigimali, also a mountain in the Pyrenees range. Anne simply hitched up her skirts and off she went. She detailed all her travels in her diaries, still writing partly in code. Anne's last relationship was her most enduring, with the wealthy heiress Anne Walker, beginning in 1832 when Anne Lister was 41. Anne and Anne had met many years before, but now Anne had an added incentive. She was younger, and now she had money to help keep Anne in the lifestyle to which she was accustomed. She still had money from Shibden Hall, collieries and the land, and there was a ready reserve from Anne. Anne and Anne discussed the future, and Anne the elder asked Anne to live at Shibden with her as her wife. Anne the younger deliberated, and Anne left for Copenhagen. After reuniting, and after Anne the younger turned down a marriage proposal from a man, Anne and Anne married in 1834 in the Holy Trinity Church, Gruderumgate in York, while taking the Easter sacrament with other churchgoers and exchanging rings there in secret. Their union was the first recognised lesbian marriage in Britain, and there is a plaque on the church commemorating this. Both women altered their wills, making each other life tenants of their estates, Anne the younger of Shibden Hall and Anne the elder of Crownest. The couple went on a three-month travelling honeymoon, and when they returned to Halifax, Anne moved her belongings into Shibden Hall. Two women cohabitating together and acting as if married was a scandal of Halifax, with their effigies even being burned in the streets. Some local pranksters even put notices in the Leeds Mercury newspaper congratulating the couple on their marriage, and I quote, "Captain Tom Lister of Shibden Hall to Miss Anne Walker," end quote. The marriage wasn't always a happy one. Anne the elder was assertive, while Anne the younger felt neglected with the ongoing works at Shibden, mostly funded by Anne the younger, and her battle with ongoing anxiety and depression didn't help her sadness while Anne the elder went into politics, nonplussed by her wife's suffering. In 1838, Anne wanted to travel again, but she found Anne the younger not a happily travelling companion she wanted. The couple went on to Russia, where Anne wanted to go home, but Anne the elder convinced her to keep travelling. In 1840, the couple were still travelling and now enjoying their trip. Anne last wrote in her diary on the 11th of August, 1840, and I quote, "High hills north and within ridges of wooded hill, rising every now and then into little wooded conical summits," end quote. Anne died 6 weeks later of a fever caused possibly by an insect bite. She was 49. Anne the widow transported Anne's coffin body back to Halifax, an arduous journey through Northern Europe, which took her 8 months to do. Anne was now sole beneficiary of Shibden, and she was declared insane after a policeman, doctor, and lawyer broke into Shibden and found Anne cowering behind a door with loaded pistols and paperwork strewn about her. The Walker family had her committed to an asylum. ironically, the same asylum, which still housed Eliza from Anne the Elder's school days. Anne passed away in 1854 at Cliff Hall, aged 50. Anne the Elder's diaries were all kept meticulously and reverently by Anne, who hid them away at Shibden when 70 years later, in 1890, a descendant of Anne's, a John Lister, enlisted the help of his friend Arthur Burrell to decipher the code held within the pages. They cracked the code, but Arthur demanded that the diaries be burnt when he realized they held all of John's ancestors' sexual exploits with women, with Arthur bitterly saying, and I quote, "Hardly any one of them escaped her," end quote. John thankfully ignored Arthur's request, and all 26 volumes were again hidden in wood panelling at Shibden, where they would stay until John's death in 1933. The diaries were rediscovered and gifted to the Halifax Library. Arthur, now in his 80s, felt he needed to give his secret of the code to the council. In 1982, researcher and teacher Helena Whitbread got Arthur's code from a librarian after finding the diaries in the library. In a change from previous years where researchers were attempting to discover Anne's secrets, only to have their work checked by the council for what they called inappropriate findings that could lead to scandal, Helena was able to decipher Anne's secrets. All of Anne's secrets. In 1988, Helena published a book called I Know My Own Heart, detailing Anne and Mariana's relationship and their lovers, which caused sensation as it gave full details of female-to-female relationships at a time where the word wasn't even used or lesbians were unheard of, hiding in plain sight in most cases. Anne Lister wrote over 5 million words, 26 volumes of diaries, 14 travel diaries over 34 years, a sixth of those 5 million words in code. She was a woman surviving and thriving in a man's world and teaches that women have desire and needs in a time where women were thought to be extensions of their husbands or their male relations, not their own person. And Anne didn't put limits on herself based on sexuality or gender. Yay, Anne! Anne Lister, welcome to What the History?
Woohoo! I had heard about her before and the fact that she had all these adventures written in code. And yeah, I mean, I had been curious about it for quite some time, yeah. So very cool.
Thank you. I just thought she was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, bit of a marvel.
Yeah, I really like her.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Anne.
Quite the dazzler.
The Bobby Dazzler. What is a Bobby Dazzler? Okay.
I'm not too sure. But yet again, my segue gets stepped on.
I did say Dazzler, though.
You did. But nothing to do with Bobbies.
No Bobbies here. No Bobbies were hurt in the making of this podcast.
No. I shall get on with it and explain my convoluted...
Dazzling.
Marvellous segue.
Yes.
So... with the relatively recent culminations of some major geeky movie franchises, I'm sure many of you saw Avengers Endgame just last year, it seemed fitting to go back and look at the rather bizarre tale of Marvel Comics' first foray into the world of motion pictures. Now, I'm not referring to the 1988 TV movie The Incredible Hulk Returns, which saw the Hulk and Thor team up to fight baddies, or even the 1986 George Lucas-produced cinematic travesty Howard the Duck, even though that could be a worthy subject for another episode.
Oh, my Lord.
P.S., you can find out more about these movies by checking out the Rufus Project podcast, currently living on archive.org. Just saying. We need to go even further back to 1979, when the Vice President of Business Affairs for Marvel Comics, Alice Dunnenfeld, decided there needed to be a superheroine who could also sing.
Because why not?
She hoped they could partner with a record label and have music produced to go with her ongoing comic book adventures. She gave the responsibility to editor-in-chief Jim Shooter, who in turn enlisted the help of comic book artists Tom DeFalco and John Romita Jr. Being 1979 and hot on the heels of disco fever, they created Dazzler, also known as Disco Dazzler, an X-Men character whose mutant power allowed her to transform sound into beams of light, with music being the most potent sound source for her. She also wore roller skates for some reason, even though she could fly. The troubles started almost immediately. John Romita Jr.'s initial concept was based on Grace Jones. If he had his way, Marvel would have had a female African-American superhero on its roster, which would have been amazingly progressive in 1979. Unfortunately, with the likes of Casablanca Records already showing interest and pressure from above, the push was on to base Dazzler on up-and-coming star Bo Derek for greater commercial appeal. Jim Shooter was called back into Alice Donenfeld's office for a meeting with representatives of Casablanca Records and Filmworks with a plan of turning Dazzler into an ongoing cartoon series, much like the Archies. And they wanted to launch with a star-studded half-hour special full of Marvel characters and voices of artists who were signed to Casablanca and Filmworks. The big catch was they needed a script treatment in just 4 days. Jim took on the challenge, and when he presented his creation, it was decided on the spot that it would have to be a big-budget, star-studded, feature-like, cinematic disco spectacular. It isn't easy to make a basic synopsis for what was intended, but I'll give it a go. Spider-Man and the Avengers investigate strange goings-on at a disco, quickly being introduced to Dazzler before being whisked into a future New York City, which had been split into 2 distinct areas by a great calamity. Each area was ruled by a queen, and of course they were at war with each other, leaving the heroes to be caught up in the middle. Jim had been told he could cast whoever he wanted from the available talent, and money was no issue. He envisioned the Witch Queen being played by Cher, with their henchmen, the Dread Knights, being portrayed by Kiss. On the other side, the Queen of Fire was to be Donna Summer, certainly backed up by her cronies, the Stompers, or as we more commonly know them now, as the Village People. Robin Williams was slated to play Dazzler's love interest, and Rodney Dangerfield would be tasked with the multiple bad guy henchman roles, as well as a big bad himself, Lord Chaos. Throw in unicorn-riding flaming warriors, lizard-riding fighters, chariots made from old VWs, and wagons created from the remains of Datsun pickup trucks, and you might think things are getting way too silly even before you get to the fight scene between the superpowered Kiss and Village People teams, or the disco performance battle between Cher and Donna Summer. Rather unbelievably, that synopsis isn't why the film never made it off the ground. Casablanca and Filmworks were 100% on board and ready to go. There were some financial issues and some pretty questionable business dealings, which were fast leading to Casablanca being bought out. So while the enthusiasm was great, the promised funding was not going to happen. Alice Donenfeld was still keen to get the movie made. In 1980, she took Jim's treatment to the Cannes Film Festival to garner interest and shop it around. She managed to get a pretty major name on board when the inspiration for the character's look, Bo Derek, signed on to play Dazzler. This started a bidding war, and it looked like Dazzler would still get to shine on the big screen. One unnamed Hollywood bigwig decided they couldn't possibly shoot a script written by a lowly comic book writer, and so it was reworked that Dazzler's powers changed from being light-based to being able to compel baddies to tell the truth. After reading the updated script, Bo Derek decided she would only do the film if her husband John directed. And since John Derek was infamous for going over schedule and over budget, the offers soon dried up. The Disco Dazzler movie was officially dead. Dazzler made her comic book debut in X-Men 130, released in February of 1980, as part of the Dark Phoenix storyline, which ties in nicely to when she finally made it up on the big screen, 40 years after her planned debut was written. If you look closely in Dark Phoenix, released just last year in 2019, if you're from the future, there is a scene where the students of Charles Xavier's School for the Gifted are celebrating, with Dazzler singing for them, surrounded by light. While I'm not sure if I really would want to see the Disco Dazzler movie, I do know I want to see the battle between Kiss and the Village People. That would certainly be a fine piece of What the History.
When you were going through that fight scene, I had to bite my finger to stop from laughing.
Oh, it was just amazing.
People will laugh during you.
I didn't go into it fully, but each member of KISS and the Village People had powers based on their characters within those bands.
Oh, my Lord.
So who knows where that was going to end up. Oh,
maybe Paul Stanley has a magic stars coming out from him.
I don't know.
I don't want to know what Gene Simmons would have had.
I'm thinking the construction work would be quite violent, really.
He gets a piece of 42.
pulls out a jackhammer.
Here, meet my little friend.
Anyway, and we hope you have enjoyed our return to our bizarre bits of history.
Oh, gosh, this is good.
It is good.
It has been so long. I've really missed doing this. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sticking with us.
Absolutely.
And no. I have had quite a few requests from people going, when are you coming back? We miss you.
Mm-hmm.
It's been lovely. And mwah, mwah, mwah.
Okay. So if you want to know more about what we discussed, all our references are down in the podcast description, just down below.
Absolutely.
And happy clicking there. There's some awesome information tucked away amongst all
happy
that.
Happy clicking.
Happy clicking.
Happy clicking.
Happy clicking. And if you want more What the History, and why wouldn't you?
Yes.
We have had a bit of a rearrange. All the podcasts are done by the Rufus Project and now under the banner of the Rufus Project Presents. So if you head to rufusproject.com, you can find all the What the History podcast episodes, as well as the episodes of the revamped Rufus Project podcast, now known as Redeeming Features. You'll also find links to where you can subscribe to all the podcasts. And we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you like to use. Again, follow all the links and you will find us nice and easily. Now, as we mentioned before, we have come back from quite a bit of a break. I'm pretty sure we might see a drop in the numbers after such a long hiatus, which is unfortunate. So,
Come back.
Please come back. And if you want to help us get back, I can't stress this enough. I'm not going to go about this every single episode like you might hear on a lot of other podcasts. But if you rate and review us on your podcast app, and if you tell people about us and get people to listen, that would be so much appreciated. And you can even join a conversation with us about what we discuss and what you would like to hear. Because not only do we have the What the History Facebook page, we now have the What the Historian Facebook group.
Ooh.
Indeed. So a place for What the Historians to get in is very, very easy. Just find What the Historians on Facebook. Answer the simple question, what's your favorite bizarre bit of history? And join in. Yeah. Still setting up how that's going to work, but we intend to be active on there as well. So it's going to be a great place. Now, as we mentioned in the waffle, things have been a bit crazy. Things are still a bit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't promise fortnightly episodes at the moment, but we are going to aim for at least one a month initially and go from there. Of course, any other updates, we will let you know about ASAP either here on the podcast or on the What the History Facebook page. You can also, of course, subscribe to the Rufus Project. Sorry, the Redeeming Features cast. That's available in all the places. And of course, like I said, keep an eye on rufusproject.com for more wonderful podcasty things. Now, if you want to get in touch with us other ways, I'm really rambling with this.
Yeah, you're fine. Go for it.
We've still got our email address, wthpod@rufusproject.com, where we will be happy to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, everyone, come, all ye faithful.
I am way out of practice on the plugs.
It's okay. It's our first time back in.
Yes, we will get better.
A long time. Yes. A long time. But we're back.
We're back and we're loving it.
Yeah, so, thank you so much for listening to us.
Indeed. So, until next time. We will be back, hopefully in about a month, with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
what the history? Good night, everyone.
Farewell. Jack the Last, Jack the Last, Jack the Last, no one likes a Jack.
Gentleman Jack.